Hey, it's Chaz and AJ in the morning.
Hey, what's going on?
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Here are some of the best parts from today's show.
Listen to it, please. Thank you.
And please subscribe, share, like, comment, all that stuff.
All of it, please.
Thank you. Remember we were talking about that hoarder house from hell?
Yes.
All the cars,
the stuff.
It took 10 weeks to clean the house out. Can you imagine 10 weeks?
10 weeks.
10 weeks.
There was a lot of stuff in that
10 weeks.
That thing was jammed, man.
Not two.
You had to go
10.
Outside. Go outside to change your mind.
Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR, 95.9, the Fox, Pat Fornaro in studio.
Good morning.
How you doing with that? Where is that? Can we say what town or we'd rather not?
Yeah, we can say everything because we want to talk about the tag sale that we're doing on Saturday.
Tag sale, nice.
Yeah. Now you have AJ's attention. All right, so this is the house that had a lot of cars outside.
Parts, whatnot.
Weren't you like finding cars as you were like mowing grass down?
Yeah, well, I thought
that's a redneck joke right there.
I thought we had 13 cars, but then we found out we actually had 16.
Wow.
So, yeah.
They're
kind of hidden in the back and you know, under brush and everything.
The last time you were on, AJ was going nuts about these cars.
I was flipping out, yeah. I mean, there was a couple of cars that were worth saving, you know, a couple of trucks.
But you don't
know
unless you really see the car.
Right, but I mean, they had potential. The Firebird had potential. There was a Dodge van had potential.
And who got those cars?
We just sent them to the junkyard. Yeah. Because I'll tell you, the cars were really in tough shape. They were sort of shells. You know, the interiors were all gone.
But also good for parts, too. Folks can't find parts.
Well, that's true. But you have to look at it from, like, our perspective. We're buying a house to fix it and sell it.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So you're a house flipper. How many have you done? Like, 180?
Yeah, 187 so far.
Isn't that amazing?
Damn, man.
Yeah. And we're still learning. I mean, anyone could say, oh, we've done those houses, and, you know, we know what we're talking about. And, you know, we do to a certain amount. But we're always learning.
You guys want to practice on my house?
Yeah, for real.
I've been spending the last couple of months just surrounding myself with smart people in this area just to try to figure it out. And when you hear this guy is still learning, it's like, okay, you're just going to, you know, kind of go along. Mm-hmm. You know what? Here, AJ, this might make you feel better.
Okay.
That junkyard didn't just crush those cars if there was any value to them.
Yeah, okay? I would hope at least they part them out.
They're not going to junk them.
Yeah, because there was a couple of really good parts on some of those cars.
Right. And that's you know, that was the whole idea.
Yeah.
Let's just let them take them, do what they can do with them. We did get paid for them. We got something for
them. Oh, yeah. No, you definitely got
I think it was like $250 per car, which is probably, you know, criminal when you look at the Firebird. I mean, that was a nice car. But then again, if you look inside it, there was nothing left to it. It was a shell.
Right.
And it was rotted because it was stored outside.
Yeah.
So it really, there wasn't much left to the cars. But
AG's had more concern for these cars than the kids on the bus in the previous segment.
Yeah. That's right. Phil, that's a gimme.
Wait till he hears about the auto parts we threw away.
Yeah, the video that we watched the last time you were here, that house was full of parts.
Lots of parts.
Oh, it was unbelievable.
New old stock.
And you have to remember, or you don't know, but I'll tell you, I was in the auto parts business for 20 years with my dad. We had three Napa stores.
Oh, wow.
So this is kind of like a flashback for me, going back to the 70s and the 80s.
So
scene.
Sweating?
Yeah, exactly.
So you knew what a lot of those parts were?
Oh, I knew what everything was.
Nice.
Yeah, some of the ones I even knew part numbers, you know, but it was carburetors. We probably threw out 100 carburetors, but we saved some of them. The Holley double pumpers, we saved those. They may have some value, but
so good for you that you knew what you were dealing with.
Yeah, like a stock carburetor, unless somebody really badly needed it, but it's worth getting rid of.
Hmm.
From what I understand, because a friend of mine actually went to that house before you bought it, and apparently that person used to own a speed shop, and he says an awful lot of like really, really rare and hard to get speed shop parts in that pile.
And
please tell me you didn't throw those out.
We didn't throw those out, and they'll be part of the tag sale, but I think we need to find a specialized buyer for that kind of thing. But there's a lot of performance distributors, but the starters and the alternators that were brand new, not in boxes.
Yeah.
You know, we scrapped them, and you know, my father's been gone 14 years now, and I just felt him looking down, saying,
"What are you doing?
You doing throwing this stuff away?"
That lightning bolt got real close.
I know, right?
Why didn't you, as a house flipper, find this one and say, "Let me hit pause on this one. We're not gonna flip this one as fast as we normally do because there's some treasure here."
Mm-hmm. Well, you kind of weigh out the holding costs and, you know, the opportunities.
Market can turn.
And the market can turn. Now, I just did buy something else in Meriden, so we're going to start on that.
How many do you have at any given time?
Well, now, if we have two going at once, it's a lot. But when I first started in, you know, I think it was 2005. five, I think. We had, I think, five or six going at once. It was a completely different market back then, 100% financing just before the market crashed. But now we're probably, you know, one or two at a time. You know, we want to, you know, be smart about it.
Yeah.
But the next one, the Meriden's not a big job. So we're just going to kind of do that quickly and then kind of sneak that in while we're doing the tag sale in Durham and then come back to Durham and, you know, finished it.
Tag sale in Durham. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so how bad was this house? How many dumpsters?
Well, 10 weeks to clean it up.
Ten weeks.
How big was the house? How many outbuildings?
Let me think. We had, I think, five or six outbuildings that we actually ended up giving away. And I need to give a shout out to Randy Whitehouse. He has Whitehouse Construction. He's a friend of Dominic and John's and now mine. He's one of my favorite people now because he came by with some equipment and helped really with his payloader, helped us move a lot of the debris in the yard and, you know, pulling things out of the house. We'd probably still be there unloading things if it wasn't for him coming by. So he took a lot of the outbuildings. All the outbuildings are gone. And let me think. We're 13 dumpsters, but it's interesting.
13
dumpsters, but that should have been 20 or maybe 17 because John and Dom have this mini excavator that they would compress everything into the dumpster. So those dumpsters were very expensive because they were overweight, but still we cut down on the overall number of dumpsters.
Yeah, I remember doing that with the project house. Just keep pushing it.
Push it down.
You see that truck leaving with the full dumpster, and the tires are almost flat. It's just the weight of it pushing the truck down.
Like sticking in the garbage in the garbage can.
If you look at one of our videos, we had also dumpsters for scrap metal. And if you watch when they're taking it away, the front wheels of the truck come off the ground.
What the hell, man?
Well, there's engine blocks and there are crankshafts and all sorts of really heavy.
Was that stuff inside the house or the parts were in the outbuildings and the other stuff was in
there? It was in the garage. A lot of the stuff was in the garage. You know, there's two garages. There's the large barn garage and then there's the garage that's attached to the house.
Yeah.
And they both had a lot of like big engine parts. I mean, there had to be five or six engine blocks just in the garage. That's under the house. And then the crankshafts. I mean, there had to be four dozen crankshafts. I don't know what he was saving these things for.
Right.
When you went in the house, what was in there?
Mostly new merchandise. And I don't know if any of the tribe can call in and tell us why this guy would have all this new merchandise stacked up and was organized. I don't know what he was
doing.
What
do you mean, like parts or
merchandise,
just household items?
Household items like microwaves, coffee makers, stereo equipment. Some clothes, just all sorts of things that they were brand new. And tools, you can't imagine. If anyone wants to come by the tag sale, you'll see.
When is it? This Saturday?
This Saturday, yeah.
Where?
At 62 Wheeler Hill Drive in Durham. And I'm not sure of the time yet. I don't know. We're not handling it. Dominic's wife is actually conducting it. But it's probably like from 8 o'clock or something on.
All right. Send us a one sheet.
Yeah.
AJ could post it, too, so his car friends can see.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. Let me get a hold of it. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
So a lot of my friends would like.
You're at the Oxford Car Show on Saturday?
Yeah.
So you won't be able to go, but you could post it on your Facebook.
I will definitely do it. Yeah. Please send it my way.
Holy crap. Did you ever feel like this when you were walking through some of these aisles of stuff stacked that you were in danger?
Well, Dominic, again, if you watch our videos, there's a couple of times where things kind of fell on people.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. There were big piles of things.
Did you do a head count of your crew after all this?
One guy's missing. I found a shoe.
Anyone see Jimmy?
I know, right?
It was like human Jenga.
I thought I heard something when that last dumpster left.
Right.
Well, the thing is, we didn't know what was in the house, so John, Dominic, and I kind of really did the work ourselves, and normally it's John and Dom. They just, you know, take over, do the job, and my job is to find the houses and to finance them and to sell them. But with this one, I had to jump in.
So it's a house flipper, and people are fascinated with this. You can see all the house flipping shows there are on television.
Yeah,
so even the people who don't flip houses are kind of interested in the concept of it. So you go, you find the house.
Mm-hmm.
And then do you decide what we're going to invest and what we're going to do? And then Dom comes in and does it?
Yeah, pretty much. But we collaborate on everything. And I'll look at the house. And if it meets most of our criteria, then I'll move on to have John and
what
Dom.
What criteria?
Still standing?
It's got to have the right things wrong with it. Something that's what I call functionally obsolete. If it's an older home and the layout just isn't fixable without major construction, then I won't touch
really?
It.
Really?
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's just one of my pet peeves. I like conventional styles, like raised ranches, Capes, you know, regular ranches, Colonials, something that, you know, people are familiar with. If you get something too contemporary, and I'm sure
if you have to start moving walls around to make have it make sense, then you don't do it.
Wow. Well, we take walls down, but we don't move walls and reconfigure as much. Because, again, you want to make sure it's cost
effective. You'll open up, but you won't move stuff, move a wall.
Exactly. That's why we love Capes. You know, they're just a square box.
Yeah.
You know? And, okay, where's the kitchen? In the back right, back rear. And we'll just take the wall down between the kitchen and the living room, open that, you know, wide up. And it's
where do most flippers make mistakes?
Buying my house. Mine's listed as hospice.
I think your house would be a good house. I would just knock it down.
Mine's listed as hospice. Most of the houses on my streets, not for nothing.
That's what they do.
They were knocked
the
down.
The lot's worth more.
They want that neighborhood.
Yeah.
Yep. Because
That's Milford, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Milford road, is really desirable. The mistake a lot, most that I've seen most flippers, because we do some coaching too, is they overpay. They overpay. You make your money when you buy the house.
When you buy the house.
Right, not when you sell it. And a lot of times wholesalers will bring me deals, but they'll say, okay, well, this is what it's worth after repair, and this is what it's going to cost to do the repair. And invariably, they underestimate the repair cost, and they overestimate what the house will sell for, even in this market. So that's the biggest, because if you've got some cushion, then cause you're always going to find something that you didn't expect. This house, we didn't even inspect the septic, which I would never advise. But we just didn't, and you know,
was it that good of a deal?
I'll let you know when we sell.
Yeah, it's funny though, because we got a really good one in the studio right now, Pat Fanaro.
Yes,
he's owner president at Home Remedies LLC. You watch those shows, and they're like, "Hey, Judy and Jim bought this house for $6,900.
Yeah,
and they plan to put $5 into it, and they're going to sell it." For $87,000.
Right, like, yes.
Get out of here.
Right.
Have you seen those shows?
Yeah.
The numbers are stupid.
Yeah. I have a funny story, too, if you want to hear it quick.
Yes, please.
Okay. Well, when I first started, you know, 15 years ago, I auditioned for Flip This House on A&E.
Okay.
And I thought I had a pretty good chance of getting picked. And we went to a few stages. And then finally, the producer called me and they wanted to do something in Connecticut because they were in New York and the whole thing. So I watched the show and I said, Steve, I love the show. I want to be a part of it, but your numbers don't make sense. He said, you're saying you can gut rehab a house for $30,000. That's not possible. So, we went back and forth and he said, look, this is not educational programming. It's entertainment. And at that point, I think he just figured out that I was just going to be too much of a problem child for him. But they're not realistic. And they give people false hopes. They get into the business and then they get into trouble because it's a lot more challenging than they expect it to be.
Gotcha.
I owned a beautiful rock star kind of house. Sold it to this couple. They decided they wanted to be on one of these shows. As they started rehabbing it, and they, on the show, acted like they hadn't bought the house yet. So they're walking through the house, and it's all torn up.
Uh-huh.
And they never really explained why it was all torn up.
Right.
I didn't leave the house that.
I didn't show you pictures, did I?
And I bought it from.
Yeah. Right. And nothing really needed to be. Well, I was so angry at that concept.
You're wearing overalls, no shirt underneath it. I knew it!
Why would you lie on camera like that?
Well, there was another example in Atlanta where they didn't even own the house, and then after they shot the show, they pulled up all the landscaping, and they said it was the open house, but it was really the wrap party for when they finished filming, and it was just a whole scam, and there was a lot of lawsuits involved. So, yeah, you just got to be careful about what you believe.
So we're talking to Pat about this hoarder house from hell.
Yeah.
10 weeks to clean out. There's a big tag sale.
Yeah.
This Saturday in Durham.
In Durham. Yeah.
Okay. And you'll send us a one sheet and we'll post it.
Sure. Yeah.
Not a car parts. What else?
there's
you mentioned. Yeah.
There's a lot of hand tools. A lot in Craftsman, really? Snap-on, roll around toolboxes.
Nice.
I think we've got 7 roll around toolboxes.
Oh, really?
Nice. But the big ones.
Right.
The
chests.
Big ones.
Yeah.
The big chests.
Oh,
nice. Yeah. And there's air compressors, air hoses. I found one little case full of tape measures. There's like 50 tape measures in this one box, and most of them are brand new.
I just bought one, too. Damn it.
Oh. I would have brought you one. I mean, I don't think they missed one tape measure.
Well, we all got a tape measure. That's kind of weird.
Oh, but there's like air compressors. There's air hoses. Here, I had to make a list because there's so much.
I guarantee you right now half my friends are all drooling.
Bobo from Durham is on. Hey, Bobo.
Bobo.
Hey, it's a townwide tag sale. It's not just this guy's on Wheeler Hill Drive.
Oh, is that right?
We're part of it. Yeah, it's actually it's for the Durham Animal Rescue team.
Oh, nice.
Awesome.
And we're even cooler.
Yeah, nice. So we're kind of helping out with that. I should have mentioned that. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Bobo.
Bobo.
You're gonna clean up. What's the weirdest item you found in this house? Is there one?
Inhabitants.
He was smiling immediately. I did see that.
Yeah, I thought ink and dry.
It depends on what I'm allowed to share.
Like a marital item?
Well, not a marital item, because I think this gentleman was single, but something that a single...
An enhancer?
There was a very graphically illustrated instructional manual for participating in activities with another person.
Oh. Chemistry box.
Is that going to be at the tag sale?
Or? Well, it's there.
No one wants to touch it. I'm not touching that. It's still in the middle of the floor.
A friend of mine who's a roofer, John Gee, picked this job and was like, yeah, we'll do the roof. And then we're like, hey, would you mind throwing out the stuff in the attic? He's like, yeah, no problem. They get up there, and it's all Playboy magazines.
Wow.
Just the whole attic's packed from floor to ceiling.
What? Decades of them. Man.
So they rip the roof, they rip the plywood, and they just start throwing the Playboy magazines into the dumpsters. And some of them were collectibles, like Marilyn Monroe. Like they're just like, gotta do this. Turns out to be a windy day. They're blowing all over the neighborhood.
Oh, God. Little Timmy learned a lot.
The school bus stops. Kids are getting off. They're picking up.
Mommy, look.
Today for show and tell, I brought this magazine with pages stuck together.
What do you think you'll sell that house in Durham for? What's the price point you're going to put it on for?
I'm really hoping we can approach $500.
Okay.
The barn garage itself is two levels.
How much land?
0.8 acres.
Okay.
So, and the house is, I think, like 2,000 square feet.
Okay.
And you know, three bedrooms. It's going to have two.
And it's all redone. It will be.
It'll be nice.
Okay. Wow. It's just cleaned out now.
Yeah.
Now comes the
rebuild.
Exactly.
The rebuild. Gotcha.
But there is something I want to ask you about that we did find. We found 14 cases of 45 records with the sleeves.
Wow.
And some of them are Elvis and Frank Sinatra.
Oh, bring them in. We'll do another segment with Mighty John the Record Guy.
Yep.
Yeah, because I have someone going through them now, but I'm sure I can kind of get them and maybe have him.
You trust that person?
Well, yeah, really.
All of a sudden, if they're really rich, they found that one Elvis record.
That's a new car you're driving to, Bob. Why is that?
Where'd you get that car?
Mighty John does have that story about ripping off the church tag sale.
That's a Bentley, isn't it?
This gentleman is my manager. I own a hardware store, so he's my manager. So I trust
you
him.
You can trust him.
Why did he quit all of a sudden?
But if you want, we'll have bring in a box one day.
Yeah.
We'll have him on, and then he could price some of these out. And then, you just donate the money to, or whatever.
No,
we'll do whatever you want.
No, we donate. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
The AJ Fund.
All right. Anything else before we wrap up here?
It's just, again, tools. That was the overall theme. And I just don't understand how all of this got accumulated by one person. And it was so organized. Everything was in its place. It was just really kind of mind-boggling to try to understand how this got to this point.
Wow.
But, yeah, there's just a lot.
You'll give us the info, then we'll link it up.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I post that,
for the big tag sale. Yeah, AJ,
your friends
will go bananas.
Right.
All right, Pat Fanaro, owner, president at Home Remedies. Thank you, sir. The Westport Weston Chamber of Commerce executive director is on the phone now. His name is Matthew Mandel. Hey, Matthew.
Hey.
Hi. So what's the deal? You can't have gas-powered leaf blowers in Westport anymore?
Well, that's what the ordinance created, was to send a message, essentially, to the landscapers and to private citizens that gas-powered leaf blowers were no longer something that we wanted to have in town. And
no longer wanted, but or illegal?
Well, the problem is that we created an ordinance that didn't actually have an enforcement mechanism because we couldn't find a way to really make it work. Police really didn't want to go and start talking to the landscapers themselves, because that could create some issues. There may be undocumented folks that are doing this, people who are just wanting to work, and suddenly we have a problem.
Right.
So the goal was to set down an idea to say, listen, gas-powered blowers are a problem, and let's try to work towards not having them. And that's what the ordinance essentially does.
Yeah. Wait, so the police don't want to talk to them because they might be breaking another law.
Oh, right.
Exactly.
Right. We don't want to talk to you about like this stupid gas power thing if you're not even supposed to be here to begin
with. Right. Hey, how'd you get here, by the way?
You got
good people that are trying to do work. They're helping out society. They're making money for their family.
Yeah, of course, yes.
And why do we want to start breaking that up? Because we have an environmental issue that we're trying to address. So that's the issue why there really wasn't an enforcement mechanism put in.
Right.
And so now we've have, you know, indirect problems that have come from that.
The landscapers, their argument is these battery power things are way more expensive. You got to charge them every 2 minutes.
Yeah, they don't last as long.
They're not as powerful. It takes longer, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Right?
Right. Absolutely. That's exactly what they're saying. And I don't disagree. I don't think the technology has come to speed yet. Some of us were asking for it to start in 2026, 2025, when the technology would be catching up. And, you know, the majority ruled and that we started it in 2024. And it's just not working properly because of that.
Right.
Is anyone in Westport using a battery-powered leaf blower?
Well, sure. I mean, I have my own personal one that I use around the driveway and stuff, and it's wonderful for that type of stuff.
But not for fall cleanup.
Not
commercial scale. Not at all. No.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, people are saying that they're buying commercial grade ones. They're really not commercial grade ones because those are hugely expensive and the batteries are expensive. And you do have to have a pile of them because they run out after 12 minutes.
One guy's using blow dryer.
12 minutes.
Conair.
12 minutes, 15 minutes, sure. And then you need another one. And then you realize that you have to have some kind of generator running at on-site to charge all the batteries as you're moving around because these guys have 10, 15, 20 places that they have to go during the week.
Matthew,
during the day.
You sound like you know that this is a stupid ordinance.
Ain't going to work, yeah.
I wouldn't call it stupid. I think that would be a bad way to say it. It's a work in progress. It's an idea that we should be moving forward to be more environmentally friendly. This one just doesn't quite get there yet.
How about a muffler system for the battery for the gas powered stuff?
You guys were talking before having a drone and shooting a flypaper at it or something to stop it. You know,
I
can't do that.
Well, yeah, we also think on our feet like you do.
Yeah, but you're talking about electric.
Hold on. Our flypaper idea is about is in the same level of stupid as this battery powered leaf blower thing in Westport in 2024. Now in 2030 we can have a conversation and say, yeah, okay, we're there.
Right.
We're not there yet.
Not yet, no.
Yeah.
Well, California had it set that sometime by 2027, you couldn't buy any more gas-powered ones because they were looking to the future, figuring that the technology would get there. And maybe that's where it will go. So we
you are seeing people running out of California.
Why do we follow California? It's the biggest flake in the world.
Yeah, I'm not going to go there. I mean, we heard Elon Musk is leaving there, too. I'm not going to go to that politics as well. But, I mean, look, we have an idea that we're trying to do something that's environmentally friendly, and it obviously isn't working right. You've got neighbor versus neighbor. You've got the police that are looking at this, the Conservation Commission that's trying to educate people. I think it's just a matter of time to make it work.
Oh, right. Neighbor versus neighbor.
Oh, wow.
Sure. Yeah. So, hey, my neighbor is still using their gas blower.
Right.
And who are they calling? And that's a problem, too.
Because what a headache for you.
We're all supposed to be getting along. Wow. Oh, you have no idea.
This has created a lot of tension.
Yeah.
Snitching. Just dry snitching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the other issue is now a lot of people were using the environmental argument to drive a noise ordinance. The reason that they wanted it banned was because they didn't like the noise, and the environment was a strong argument to be able to do that. Now that the noise is still occurring, they want to go for a noise ordinance.
Yeah,
now we're having a whole new issue.
Okay, because my battery powered blower for my car is just as loud as the gas powered blower.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my blower is kind of loud when I'm going around my driveway and stuff. But that's up to other people to decide whether it's loud or not. But now our environment committee is beginning to look at a noise ordinance, and it's driven because the gas power blower thing isn't quite working.
I got to tell you, I thought that was really stupid. I heard this in Greenwich like years ago. We reported on it. I'm like, what a bunch of morons.
Right.
And then now I'm sitting out in my yard on a Saturday, and then this guy starts his lawnmower up.
Right.
And then we get 5 minutes apiece, and then this guy over here starts his lawnmower.
And then you get, like, that phone dial tone in the middle of, like, the two engines.
It's all day. It's all day. Yeah. And then, all right, now we have some people in the back, and we're sitting down talking. And now we're going, like, who does it at 6 o'clock?
Right.
I've become that person.
See, I live in a noisy street, so it's actually refreshing.
And then Sunday morning, I'm out in the back with a cup of coffee. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Glass clipping.
It's funny you mention that because the guy diagonally across the street from me just now started up some lawn mowing. And there's some noise.
But it's 8 o'clock in the morning.
8:10 in the morning. Time to get going.
He wants to get done before it gets hot. That's why.
So, yeah. Matt. He does. Matt is the Westport Weston Chamber of Commerce Executive Director. This noise ordinance in Westport, would that be something like you can only mow and blow between these hours?
Yeah, well, currently 8 a.m. is the start time. So these guys that just started up are following the rules. You're not supposed to be doing, you know, any kind of construction and what kind of work before 8 o'clock in the morning. So they're following the rules, and that's fine. Those are the rules. People need their lawns mowed. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
You know, so we have to find some accommodation to make it work. This ordinance has got problems, but as I say, I consider it a work in progress.
Yeah.
And hopefully we can figure it out. And maybe the technology in the future will be able to enable us to do batteries. But, you know, then I won't go into the idea of, you know, lithium mining is a problem as well, and disposal of the batteries is also a problem.
Some calls on hold wanting to argue that with you.
There's a whole conversation.
There's a lot
this.
To consider.
Just give folks headphones. Noise canceling headphones.
There you go.
Don't listen.
Or earplugs and say, here, go deal with it. But that's not the way it is. You know, you're living your life and there's noise around you, and we're trying to find a way to be environmentally friendly, but we obviously have an ordinance that's got issues.
What do you do for a living?
I run the Chamber of Commerce.
It's really? Wow. Is that something you can do and make a living?
It's a paid gig, yeah. I consider myself the chief cheerleader of the town, doing events and things such as the Dog Festival, Slice of Saugatuck that's coming up, a giant food tasting, promoting what I consider is the best food scene in the state of Connecticut, which is the Saugatuck area.
Yes, and some great restaurants there.
Nice, man. Nice.
So you must have made your millions, and then now this is your retired gig?
Oh, right? Yeah, millions of dollars, yeah. No, it's not a great salary, but it is a salary, and I really enjoy doing it, and that's what's most important.
That job pays well enough for you to live in Westport?
I also have another spouse that works, so, you know, it takes two of us to live here.
Landscaping firm.
All right. I was just I guess the point.
That's right. Wouldn't that be hysterical?
Is that your name? Well, you sound like a good guy, and you're able to take a lot of grief.
Yes,
and this
man.
Is one of those. It's a business. There's no settling this thing down.
I wouldn't have come on the show if I didn't think that there wouldn't be some grief from you guys, but that's okay. You know, we're talking about an issue that's important.
It's like you know us.
Well,
you know,
this is what it takes to be a leader. You have to come and have a conversation with people.
Yes.
You know, so good for you.
Awesome,
thank you, man.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I appreciate your support. And, you know, you guys should come to Westport and eat out and
do all the time.
Come to the Levitt Pavilion and listen to music.
The Welk. I love the Welk.
Right. Those are some of our favorite things to do.
The Westport Library. Right. Oh, my God. The studios you have there.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Real special place.
And the VersaFest, which we ran in April, the 5-day music event with concerts and conversations and interviews. I mean, that's some of the great stuff that we have in Westport. And thanks for coming.
Oh, yeah, I spoke to her last
when
year.
It's happening.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, Matthew Mendel, the Westport Weston Chamber of Commerce Executive Director. Thank you. All right, remember that that guy who was lost in the woods for 10 days, and he said he was drinking water out of his boot?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Sleeping on beds of wet leaves.
Yes.
Wet leaves.
Right.
What else? He would climb to the highest
peak. He said every day he would hike up a canyon,
and then
try to yell for help, and then he would hike back down the canyon at night.
Yeah.
I kept hearing a guy yelling back. Oh, whoa, whoa.
Was this guy smart or stupid?
Yeah.
Let's talk to author, director of survival, Fieldcraft Survival, Kevin Estella. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Morning.
Good, thanks. So yes. Was this guy stupid or smart?
I think he was just very naive. I mean, from the reports that I've read, the guy left his house with no shirt on, a flashlight, and he set a pair of scissors. Which, come on,
that's right.
At least
scissors,
right.
I did forget about the scissors.
Right. Right.
Did he ever explain the scissors?
I don't.
You know, I don't think he ever did. I've been, you know, scouring over some of the news sources. I haven't seen any explanation, but he does live in California where you can not carry a fixed blade knife, but you can carry a pocket knife of just about any size. So they have some strange laws out there similar to Connecticut.
Right.
So maybe he carried scissors just to stay on the right side of the law.
Right, right.
Oh.
Right. Mess with me, I'll cut your hair.
They were safety scissors.
You know? I will give you such a bad shag cut.
I'm going to trim that one nose hair coming out.
Even no, bear, not my nose hair.
I saw a bear with a really bad haircut.
What about drinking water out of the boot?
Well, I think the boot is probably the least of his concerns. I mean, we all know that there's such a thing as Fromunda cheese.
Yes.
Right? There's
right.
cheese underneath your toes.
Right.
Which, that's just nasty. But, you know, in the water, if you're drinking untreated water, there's no shortage of parasites, bacteria, and viruses. So we're talking about things like norovirus, hepatitis possibly, meningitis, Giardia, cryptosporidium, like all sorts of cytotoxins. So the boot thing, he needed a container. Again, he could have just brought a plastic water bottle, and
right.
at least that would have protected him from the toe cheese. But,
right.
you know, this guy was...
Like bad champagne.
But couldn't he just put... You know, if you're going to drink this water, can't you just scoop it up, put it in, or put your head down into
right.
and just snap it up like a dog?
Right, or cup with your hands, you know?
So get this. Like, I grew up in Connecticut, and I used to hike to the top of South Mountain all the time in Bristol, and I used to drink water from the creeks, no problem. I'm pretty sure that I got immune to it. And the locals will tend to get immune to water if they drink it. But if you're an outsider, this guy moved to California from Colorado, he might not have those immunities. So not a good idea to drink water that you're not used to, because you'll end up exploding from both ends.
Gotcha.
All right. I used to drink the water in a stream that runs down into Indian Wells State Park.
Oh, really?
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Summertime, I was out in the woods all the time, and I would just drink from the water.
Right.
I thought that if it's running on rocks...
Right. That cleans it.
Better than pond water.
Right.
With that said, he's drinking out of the boot. So if you're going to drink the water, wouldn't it be better to drink it out of... There's no reason to drink it out of the boot, right?
Now your boot's all squishy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wet
yeah.
shoes.
I mean, the boot probably held more than he could cup in the palm of his hands. But like you were saying, you know, I would rather drink running water than water that's stagnant. But still, I would prefer that running water to still be treated in some manner, whether it's boiling, pills, running through a filter. Just drinking it, even if it's moving, you could have something dead in the water upstream, or you could
yep.
have toxins in the water upstream.
I've always thought about that with watching Walking Dead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, that scene messed me up, man.
Yeah.
The well.
Yeah.
Like a bad human stew.
Right.
You.
Let's talk about the bed of wet leaves. Wouldn't you want them to be dry?
I would like dry. Mm.
I mean, anytime that you're making a shelter, you want to keep it dry. You want to keep it as tight as possible. If you're trying to make an enclosed shelter, the wet leaves are definitely going to zap his body heat through conduction. I mean, you take your glove off in the middle of winter, put it on top of a cold hood of a car, and it's going to make you cold very quickly, as opposed to just being out in the air. So the cold and wet is not a good combination. But if he has nothing else, at least you can maybe get some comfort, even if the leaves aren't going to provide the most warmth.
Maybe it's a leaf wetter.
Maybe that water he was drinking out of his boot made him sick, and he peed the leaves.
They were dry originally, yeah.
Okay, so if he had a choice of sleeping on dry ground or wet leaves, dry ground.
Oh, dry ground all the way.
Yeah.
And, I mean, let's face it. The guy left his house without any shirt on. And the first line of defense we have when we go out into the great outdoors is our clothing.
Yeah.
And we should prepare to spend the night in the clothes that we have on our back. And this guy had no clothes on his back. So, again, I think the answer is this guy was very naive. I think he got overconfident. And as a result, he ended up walking out of that 10 days later looking like, you know, like the guy from Castaway.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah. Maybe even worse.
Wilson. Didn't the guy also have like a cougar or something like that stalking him? I could smile.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I heard him say in an interview, he said it was pretty cool that he had a mountain lion following him. Which,
that was it.
At this point, I'm like, all right, man, that's not exactly a flex. You know, if anything, you're either lying about it, because I've been in the woods with lions. I've had them on trail cameras hunting in Idaho, and we've never heard them. We've never seen them, and we have all of our faculties, you know, with us. This guy might have been hallucinating. There are any number of things that could have happened.
Right.
I highly doubt.
He had his own Lion King going on.
Might have been the boot water.
Yes.
But if he did see one following him, that thing was following him because it was food.
Right.
Because the mountain lion sees him as food, right?
How should it have them?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
No.
What about this walking up to the highest peak and then down?
So if he's walking up to the highest peak, then what he's trying to do is he's trying to get a vantage point. I mean, I've been out to Big Basin. I've hiked those woods. It's super thick. I mean, if ever there's a place where Sasquatch could exist, it's out there.
Right.
But, you know, the whole idea of, you know, being in a compromised state of health and energy level, going up and downhill, fatigue, maybe not the greatest idea. I would have just stayed up high if possible. If anything, going down at night to the water would probably be where the coldest air is. You know, heat rises and cold air sinks. Now, the thing that really bothers me about this whole case is that he didn't have a whistle. He didn't even have a whistle. He didn't even leave a note saying, hey, I'm going to go in the woods. I mean, he went into the woods on June 11th, and they finally declared him missing on June 16th, meaning it could have been all over.
They had to miss him first.
Right. Somebody has a pile of scattered bones.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's his own fault. You know, it's his own fault. I think he was super naive. I mean, I give him credit for this. His willpower was through the roof, because with minimal resources like that, I mean, my God, the guy did more than most people would, but still very, very naive.
I had this theory to follow the water, just kind of walk along the water.
Okay.
And eventually, there's always going to be something developed on the water.
True, very true, yeah.
Right. What do you think about that, Kevin?
It's a great theory. It's not always true if you go to a place that has many, many resources, water resources. Now, there are some major, major waterways, but there are so many tributaries. Like, you look at the Farmington River, right? The Farmington River has a Swift River that comes into it. But again, there are so many little places along that river that you could walk for quite some time and not see anything. And if you were injured, you might be crawling and not see anything. But where he was, I mean, it is relatively built up. He might have found something if he did. But again, the water out there and the terrain is so, so rugged. I don't know if he had the energy to do it. So it's not a bad option.
Yeah, I just think that you might find someone fishing.
Yeah.
You might, you know, there are going to be animals.
Right.
Who
whitewater rafters, maybe.
Right.
Some kind of, something.
The guys in Deliverance.
Right. I mean, if you're looking to hunt food, I mean, they're going to go there as a water source.
Right. Plus fish. Yeah.
Right.
If you're trying to be found, is it better to stay put?
Oh, gosh. So that question right there, I mean, in theory, yes, absolutely. Like, the whole STOP acronym is stay put, think, observe, plan. Like, if you get lost, that's what you should do. But the thing is, if you have an awareness of where you might be and you know, like, okay, that river that I want to follow will eventually lead to this campground. Like, if you do a little of what we call map recon ahead of time, you could say, all right, the highest mountain is this. The biggest body of water is that. And you can kind of get an idea of where you should go, and at least just spend the night, get your wits about you, and plan to do something decisive in the morning. Sometimes you stay put, sometimes you move. It all depends on the scenario.
Yeah, I thought it was stop here, I think.
They're 4 a.m.
Don't spell that out, please.
All right, so that guy's lucky he made it out, correct?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, for certain. And, you know, they said that he was yelling and other people heard him yelling. But you think about it, right? Like, with a good signal, you really need to send a message. You can't just be a whole bunch of noise. And if you're just a crazy guy screaming in the woods, like, some people might say, hey, that's just a crackhead, right? It's just a crackhead and screaming on top of his head.
Right.
You know, so what's a better way of signaling? You know,
opera?
Maybe a whistle. Maybe if you had a, you know, a cell phone, if it had service, or a Garmin InReach, you know, send a satellite message. But, again,
not everyone's got those resources. It just would be so much easier to leave a message before you go out there, and before you go out there, you know, leave it with a responsible party. And if you don't show up, then that responsible party, you know, addresses the authorities.
Gotcha.
Lucky to be alive.
Yep, exactly.
All right, Kevin, thank you, man. Great segment, as always. Author and director of Survival, Fieldcraft Survival. Thank you.
This was the Jazz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Jazz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.